Bagud HaSicha is Chelek Chav Beis, Parsha Bahar Sicha Aleph, a summary of the Sicha. On the Pasuk in this week's Parsha, the beginning of the Parsha, it says that it talks about the laws of Shemitah, that the earth shall rest, you're not allowed to do any work in the fields and the vineyards. So the Zohar says, the Pasuk says, Kisikne Eved Ivri, if you will buy a Jewish slave, he should work for you for six years, and in the seventh he shall go free. So the Zohar says, because every Jew gets to rest during the Shemitah, just like the earth rests during the Shemitah, so also the Jewish slaves also get to rest. And for this reason, he concludes, during the seventh year he shall go free. From this it seems that the Zohar is saying that when it says that in the seventh year the slave shall go free, it means in the Shemitah. But this is strange, because it's widely known throughout Shas that what it means is not during the Shemitah, it means the seventh year since he was sold as a slave, then he gets to go free, but not in Shemitah. But that's not what the Zohar seems to be intimating, that it's linked to the Shemitah halacha, as if to say that he goes free in the Shemitah. And it's very difficult to say that the Zohar argues against the whole Shas on this matter. So to understand this, we'll first explain something else. There is, we find in regards to mitzvahs, that there is a, one can fulfill a mitzvah lechatchila, the way it's meant to be fulfilled, and then there is sometimes when it gets done, but it's only b'di'evet, in other words, that you haven't done every single aspect of the mitzvah, but you did the main, the most important, the critical elements of the mitzvah, and therefore you were yotze that way as well. It's called b'di'evet. If it was done differently than it was meant to be, in certain conditions, you could fulfill your obligation that way too. And the Achrayim explained that this is not just to be understood in regards to a rabbinic mitzvah. In other words, a rabbinic mitzvah, it's obvious. The Chachamim made certain conditions. So they said these certain conditions are critical, certain conditions are not critical, and even if you do it, they declare that it's a good enough mitzvah, even if it's b'di'evet. But the Achrayim say that this applies also to Torah mitzvahs. And this, so an, even Torah mitzvahs can also be fulfilled in two ways. There is the way that it should be done, and there is the way that you can also fulfill your obligation even though you didn't do it in the best way possible. As long as you captured all the critical aspects of it, what's called the kuva, the things which are critical for this mitzvah, then you could be yotze even if you didn't do all the other conditions. And some of those conditions could be very much germane to the mitzvah, because one could imagine that, well, there are certain aspects of a mitzvah which are not really the mitzvah itself. They don't pertain to the mitzvah itself. They may be a side issue. No, it sometimes applies also in things which are very much the central theme of the mitzvah. Like, for instance, certain elements in a korban. The Gemara says that the Torah sometimes repeats a certain halacha in regards to a korban, and the Gemara says that it's shana olav la'akid. The reason the Torah repeats it a second time is because he's making it conditional. This aspect, this detail, must be fulfilled. Something that isn't of that kind of a critical condition, even if you didn't end up doing it, you were still yotze the mitzvah. So this idea will explain a number of interesting things, things which boggle the mind to a certain degree. For instance, something that pertains to the time that we're in, which is the Sfiras HaOmer. In regards to Sfiras HaOmer, how does the Torah phrase that mitzvah? Usfartam lachem mimachas haShabbos, you shall begin counting from the day after Shabbos. Now, the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, back in those days, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, there were a group that only, they didn't accept the rabbinic interpretations of the Chumash. So they said that when it says over here, Memachos HaShabbos, it means literally that Svira must always begin on Sunday or Shabbos night. And therefore, Shavuos is always on Sunday. In their understanding of it, Shavuos is always on Sunday. But of course, our interpretation of it, the Chachamim interpreted it as meaning this. In this pasuk, the word Shabbos doesn't mean Shabbos; it means Yom Tov, which means that Svira always begins the second day of Pesach, the day after the first day of Pesach. So if that's the case, we have to understand, why does the Torah say it in a way that you could make the mistake which the Tzedukim made? And there was a whole big controversy which went on for many generations about the dispute between the Chachamim, the Chazal, and the Tzedukim. Why does the Torah not simply say, Usfatim lechem mimachras hayomtev, or mimachras haPesach? Why does he say mimachras haShabbos, leaving this open to misinterpretation? So based on what we said, we can explain this as well. Just like there is a lechatchila and a bedieved of how the person approached the mitzvah. He did it either by including all the details of the mitzvah, or he missed a few details. That's something that the person either did it lechatchila or didn't. There could also be a mitzvah where the Torah presents two ways in which this mitzvah is able to be fulfilled. One is lechatchila, the way it's really complete, meant to be in every detail, and sometimes there are conditions in which the Torah knows that you're not going to be able to do it in its fullest measure, capturing every single detail, which if you could would make it a better mitzvah. An example of this would be Yom Tov, the celebration of Yom Tov. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Torah, Yom Tov is associated very much with certain karbonis that were brought, both by the community and as well by the individual. When a person came to the Beis HaMikdash, Aliyah L'Regel, for the three Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, a person was obligated to bring a karbon Oila Sri'iyah, which means when you visit the Beis HaMikdash, you have to bring a karbon of Shalmei Chagiga. These were very much, and as certainly then, the karbonis musaf that we read in the Torah about the different karbonis that have to be brought associated with every Yom Tov. So these karbonis are very much a part of the celebration of Yom Tov. However, when the Beis HaMikdash is not here, so today when we celebrate Yom Tov, of course we're celebrating Yom Tov and we are fulfilling the mitzvah of celebrating Yom Tov, even though we're missing this very much essential part of Yom Tov, which is all those karbanos that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And yet we don't say that you haven't really celebrated Yom Tov. Yes, you celebrated Yom Tov b'di'eved. In other words, the Torah says there's going to be situations in which you're not going to be able to do every single thing that a Yom Tov requires. It's still considered celebrating Yom Tov, like today with the karbanos. And in fact, if we talk about Yom Tov already, you can see that the Torah itself differentiates between different periods of the Yom Tov. There is the first and last day of Yom Tov, which are holy days. You're not allowed to do work. And then there's Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days, which are also Yom Tov, and you have to celebrate during them. You have to drink wine and eat meat because they are Moedim L'Simcha, days of joy and celebration. But still, there are so many things that you don't have to do on Chol HaMoed. So we see that the Torah also, there is the optimum way of celebrating Yom Tov, which is done on the first and last day. And then there is the secondary way, which is only required, that's all that's required during the Chol HaMoed days. The same way we can understand also the Sfira as well. There is two ways of counting Sfira. There is, it can start on Sunday and end on Shabbos. That is the perfect way that the Torah considers to be counting Sfira, because it says Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos Tihiyena. There should be seven complete weeks of counting of Sfira. What's considered the most complete weeks possible? When it follows the actual order of a week, the way the world was created, the way Hashem set into motion weeks that start on Sunday and complete on Shabbos. And if you're counting Sfira, that your first day of Sfira is on Sunday and the seventh day is on Shabbos, and that's repeated seven times, then you have seven perfect weeks of Sfira Sayimer. If it comes out in the middle of the week, so then you don't have that element of perfection. But Sfira Sayimer you still have. Because what's critical in the Torah for Sfira is not that it has to start on Sunday. It has to start the day after the first day of Pesach. That's critical. If it starts on Sunday, you get an added dimension, an added element of the perfection of Svira. But the real meaning of, in other words, the critical meaning of Sheva Shabbos Tmimas, the complete weeks, is expressed in other ways. For instance, that if you miss a day of Svira, you've interrupted your Svira and you can no longer count Svira, or at least not with a bracha. Or that we start Svira, we count Svira the night. We started after Ma'ariv, not in the morning. Why? Because if you started in the morning, you missed the whole night. So we do it, so we have a complete day, and you do 49 times that complete day. That's the critical element of Svira. A secondary, more perfect expression of Svira is if it starts on Sunday and ends on Shabbos. And that's why the Torah says, V'machas HaShabbos. Of course, V'machas HaShabbos, the critical element of it is that it means the day after Yom Tov. But the Torah phrases it in such a way that it could also be interpreted as Shabbos, because that adds this perfection to the Sheva Shabbos Tzmimis, which the Torah wants in Svira, if possible. Which explains why the Medrash says, there's a Medrash that says, it says seven complete weeks. When are they complete? When it starts on Shabbos and it ends on, when it starts on Sunday and it ends on Shabbos. So the question is, we said before, in most years it doesn't fall out that way. Does it mean that Svira is not really fulfilling Sheva Shabbos Tmimis during that time? Of course it is, but it lacks that perfection, and the Tmimis is expressed in other ways, as we said. Which explains another thing which happens at the end of Svira. The end of Svira, of course, culminates with Shavuos, the Yom Tov Shavuos, on the 50th day. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that Shavuos can actually come out. Shavuos is always the 50th day of Svira. But it can come out on the 5th of Sivan, it can come out on the 6th of Sivan, it can come out on the 7th of Sivan. That is depending on if in the time when they used to set Rosh Chodesh based on the sighting of the moon, so then you could, and there's two Rosh Chodeshes in between, so if both of them are 29 days, then it'll be there at the 5th. It'll arrive at the 5th of Sivan. If one was a Chasser, one was a Mali, it'll be on the 6th, which is the way our calendar is set now. And if both of them are Mali, then it'll only arrive on the 7th of Sivan. So we have to understand, because we find that the Chachamim connect, and bringing it from the Torah itself, that the Shavuos is connected to Matan Torah. Even though Shavuos is not called in the Torah the day of Matan Torah, it's Atzeres Yerlachem, but the Torah seems to connect it with Matan Torah as well. Where do we see that? The Gemara says, the Gemara Yerushalmi, that on Shavuos we don't say the word Chatos, which means, and in the other readings in which the Musaf Karbonis are numerated, it says Usiir Izim Echad L'Chatos, and one goat for a chata should be brought as a part of the Musaf Karbonis. By the reading of Shavuos, it doesn't say Seir Izim Echad L'Chatos, it says Seir Izim Echad L'Chaper, to bring atonement. It doesn't say L'Chatos. The Gemara says, because the Yidden accepted the Torah, therefore Hashem considers it as if they've never sinned. That's what this message is. In other words, that the Yom Tov Atzeres Shavuos is connected with Matan Torah. In the Torah itself, it's indicated so. So then how is it possible that Shavuos should be able to come out even before Matan Torah, on Hei Sivan, which is the day before Matan Torah? But according to what we explained, we could now explain this too. The meaning, what's behind Sfiras HaOmer is that the Yidden, as soon as they left Mitzrayim and they heard that they're going to receive the Torah, so they began to count down to Matan Torah, and that's the idea of the Sfira counting down. In other words, Sfira is a preparation for Matan Torah. According to Chassidus, we understand it even more so, that the 49 levels are in order to get you to level 50, which is something beyond what a person can reach on their own. So the culmination of Svira at Shavuos should come out in the day of Matan Torah. That is what should happen. But the Torah says that it's not essential that it has to happen that way. It can also come out even a day before Matan Torah. But if, when it does come out on the day of Matan Torah, so then that is the most perfect expression of Shavuos. The Sfira culminating on the day of Matan Torah, meaning that Matan Torah is the day after, that's the perfect celebration of Shavuos. But it's possible that it could be different too, slightly different. And since the most perfect way of celebrating Shavuos is on the day of Matan Torah, that's why the Torah left out the word Chatos from the Parsha, which talks about the Karbonos of Musaf for Shavuos. Just like we can find the difference between the perfection of the mitzvah and the secondary or critical but not as perfect, and then there's the perfect expression of a mitzvah, you can find also that the Torah presents two separate mitzvahs which carry the same theme, they're the same meaning, the mitzvah, but they're still considered two separate mitzvahs, and it has the same two elements. That is the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. The truth is that we're meant to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every single day. L'man tizkeh siyam tzeizcha Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha. Every single day we have to remember, and we say it in Shema and so on. But of course we know that on the night of Pesach, on the night of the Seder, we're meant to dwell on it, talk about it, make a big deal of it, and so on. It's much more expressive on the night of the Seder. Which can also be seen in the same way. It's two separate mitzvahs, but in a similar way. Why is the night of the Seder the day that we have to make a big deal of, a much bigger deal of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim than every ordinary day? It's because that is the actual day when we went out of Mitzrayim. It's that day that we went out of Mitzrayim. Of course that's the day which remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim is the primary idea. That's the day in which this mitzvah is fully observed and done in a much bigger way. As a result of that, we also have some sort of remembrance that happens every day. It's an extension of the way it should be done, and it is done on the day of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that evolves into a mitzvah which is done not with the same fanfare as it's done on the night of Pesach, but it's still done similar to what we said before. There are two ways in which a mitzvah can be observed. There is also another example that the Rebbe brings into this, which is not necessarily in regards to a mitzvah, but also expresses a similar idea. There's a Mishnah that says that it lists these words, that it talks about the different functions that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, and that there was somebody in charge of each one of those functions, about 20 different things. And then it goes on to list the names of the person that was in charge of that function in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we understand that this person that was in charge couldn't have been in charge on all 830 years of the Beis HaMikdash, two Beis HaMikdash. There had to be changes of the guard. Nobody lives that long. So what is the Mishnah saying? So there are two explanations. One is that the Mishnah lists only the ones that were the most outstanding in that position. That's the one that he names. Another explanation is that it's the person that was at the time when they made this list, which was towards the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, whoever was in charge then, that's who got into this, to the list. So the question is, why do we have to be told who was in charge at a certain time of the Beis HaMikdash? Why is it important for the Mishnah to list 20 odd names of people that are in the past? Why do we need to know that now? So it will be explained according to what the Bar Tanura says, a commentary on the Mishnah, the most primary commentary on the Mishnah, of Vadya Bar Tanura. He says that why are these listed? Because they were the first ones that were appointed to this job, and that all the following people were given that name when they got that position. So sort of like the first person that was in charge was, you know, Pinchas. And so therefore everybody that got that job in the future years was called the new Pinchas. The new Pinchas. Why were they given the same name as the one that was originally chosen? Because a name expresses the character of a person. You have to know how to read it. It says Reb Meir would know a person's name, and he would be able to tell you about that person just from knowing his name. So the name expresses who you are. Obviously, certain jobs need certain types of character traits, and that's why people are chosen for certain jobs, because that fits with who they are. So these jobs were also doled out in that way. So the name is associated with the person that does this job. Now, obviously, in future generations, not every person that got the job was of the same perfect character as the very first person that was chosen for it based on his character, and it was perfect matched with his name. In later generations, they could have certain elements of it that they carried as well. So therefore, their original name wasn't that name. They were given a name, whatever the name their parents chose. But when they got the job, then the name was given to them because that name expresses these particular character traits which are needed for that job. But it's not that they owned that name from birth. It's that they were given the name at the time when they were given the job because they didn't have the perfect expression of that name. Truly, they didn't. They had only somewhat of that expression, which is a similar idea to what we were saying. There is the way things are in their perfection. There are things which happen in a less than perfect way, but they still basically capture the idea. And based on this whole explanation, now we can explain why the Zohar says, in regards to the seventh year, that just like all Jews rest in the Shemitahs, therefore a slave has to go free in the Shana Shviz. There is the seventh year as it pertains to Klal Yisrael, as the Jewish people as a whole. Then there is the seventh year as it applies to the individual, to the slave, that is in bondage and therefore has to be given freedom, personal freedom as well. The difference is, when we talk about Klal Yisrael and their seventh year, the year of rest, over there, it's the perfect state of reaching rest because Hashem commanded that the land should not be worked and all the Yidden are part of it. So that is the perfect expression of that kind of freedom, that kind of rest, Shabbos LaHashem. But then the individual also has an element. He's also a part of Klal Yisrael. So he also shares in that, even in his personal life. And therefore, it's not the perfect expression of Shabbos LaHashem, but when it comes to his personal freedom, also the seventh year becomes the year in which he is given freedom, just like Klal Yisrael is given rest on the perfect, on the communal Shabbos LaHashem seventh year. So of course the seventh year for the slave is the seventh year since she was sold, not the Shemitah year. But the Zohar relates the two because they are the communal expression of Shviyas, seventh year, and then the personal expression of Shviyas, not the perfect expression of Shemitah like by the community, but still an element of that mitzvah in a Yid's personal life, in this particularly Yid's personal life.